Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast. And guess what? We are actually off this week. But that doesn't mean that you don't get anything. You can always listen to our past episodes. If you're not caught up, go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're in every podcast app you can imagine. Or there's other podcasts too. I do Presenting Hitchcock, which is basically a podcast that looks at Hitchcock films month by month. Each month we take a different one until we get through all of his films. And this past month was The Parodying Case. So that is interesting. If you want to see Gregory Peck, who's also known as the greatest lawyer in history in To Kill a Mockingbird, become the worst lawyer in history in The Parodying Case. Check that one out. But for this episode, I'm going to share a podcast that both Amanda Sink, my co-host on The Hollywood Outsider, and I do with our other co-host, Zach Parkerson from The Gaming Outsider. And it's called Smirk. If you've never listened to it, basically what it is every episode, one of us writes a very short story, usually only a couple minutes. And it's meant to lead into a discussion on any topic. So every episode is completely different. It can go dark. It can go light. It can go interesting. It can go funny. We try to make jokes on every episode. We guarantee a smile at least once in every episode, no matter how dark the topic is. And I think most recently we had Scott Clark, who used to be on The Hollywood Outsider, guest, and he wrote a story and it was dark as hell. But we still found some light in it. That's what we do at Smirk. We try to look at everything with a lighter canvas. Well, for this particular episode of Smirk, it's called Two Corpses. Everything's fine. You might notice that's a Clue reference. Well, what we're doing in this episode is I wrote a murder mystery. That's right. An actual murder mystery. It's a very short story, but it's a murder mystery. So you have to pay attention because you're trying to figure out who the killer is as well. And then we talk about murder mysteries and why we love them and yada, yada, yada. Now, usually you don't know what the topic is. I'm spoiling it. It's always a surprise. You don't know if the story is based on truth or fiction. That's part of our deal. And, it's usually about 30 minutes or less. We try to make it a drive-through of podcast entertainment because we all know you got an hour and a half on everything else or 2 hours or 3 hours. God knows everyone just wants a short podcast now and again. And that's what Smirk is. If you enjoy the episode, subscribe to Smirk. Go to smirkpodcast.com or find Smirk in your podcast app, whatever your preferred podcast app is. I think you guys are going to like it. If not, what do you got to lose? I think it's like 37 minutes or something like that of just fun. So just try to have a good time. Relax. The world is crazy right now and everybody needs a laugh. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode of Smirk. And remember, if you like it, be sure to subscribe. And in terms of The Hollywood Outsider, myself, Amanda, and John, we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Oh, I can't wait. But for now, enjoy this episode of Smirk. Welcome to the podcast that looks at truth, fiction, and reality with a smirk. I'm Aaron Peterson.
I'm Amanda Sink.
And I'm Zach Parkerson.
Welcome to Smirk. Each episode, one of our hosts introduces an original story, which we then use as a springboard for a spirited and lighthearted discussion of whatever the moral or theme of the story was. This week, it's my turn, and I've got something special.
Does it have a lightsaber?
Yes.
Okay. Whoa, I'm in. I really thought you were going to say no.
I mean, no, there isn't really one. But In your mind, you could visualize one. I think it might help.
Kind of feels like you.
I feel like this feels like a lie.
You're welcome.
Can I tell you guys one of the first things I ever wrote was a Star Wars parody book?
Oh.
Yeah.
How do you parody Star Wars more than they've done to themselves the last few movies?
Yeah.
What?
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
Thank you. Everybody.
I can never do what Disney did, but it's I did my best.
How did you parody it? I'm curious.
It was like half parody, half fan fiction. Me and my friends were the stars. There's a black bladed lightsaber. I thought that was my own invention. I was incorrect. I did have Emperor Palpatine come back to life, though, in my story.
That's the trend.
Yeah.
Because apparently,
I actually explained how he survived. So I guess I did more homework than JJ.
Well, they had to get to it, you know? He had to retcon a whole movie, so he had to get moving.
That's right. He had to yank his toys back out of the toy box.
If you guys like Smirk, every app has a share feature, so please do us a favor and share this episode on your social media outlets and rate us while you're there. Sincerely, it does really help the show quite a bit. And here's what this episode's going to be about. We posed a question in our Smirk Facebook group. If you could pick any subject to write a story on or discuss for Smirk, what would it be? So I took two of those for this one story. I'll tell you what they are afterwards, but I incorporated them into the story. So this is a listener-inspired story.
Whoa. Plot twist.
It's pretty exciting, right?
That's kind of cool, yeah. I hope you pull it off, Aaron. I hope you do it justice.
You don't know. I'm really kind of nervous about this because this is an important fact. This is something we haven't done before, okay? This is a mystery of sorts, and there will be clues that I will answer at the end of the show. So you're going to want to pay attention to the story in this one. Don't just like skip 5 minutes ahead. I mean, actually listen to the story because the clues are going to lead to the end. And I have a question for you two. You two get to decide, okay?
Ooh, like pick your own story sort of thing?
No, you guys get to decide how this rolls. Now,
oh.
my intent is I'm going to give you the answer either at the end of the episode or after the stinger of the episode. Where should it be? Like after the end music plays. Where do you guys feel I should reveal the conclusion to this story?
Because
it's kind of a mystery, so I won't tell you the answer to the mystery until either right before we exit the show or after the music. So people actually have to stick around all the way to the end to hear the actual reveal.
Or they'll just skip ahead like those book readers who read the last chapter before they listen to the beginning.
Those aren't people. Those are not people.
I respect them.
Absolutely not. I would say right before we exit.
Amanda, you concur?
Fair enough.
Okay.
I don't care. I'm fine with anything.
That's right. Let the men run the show.
Wow. Wow.
Can't even get fired in 8 years for that joke.
I was going to say, you may want to redact that and don't put it on your Twitter.
About to get gunned out here.
All right. It's time for a story. Pay attention. I know who the murderer is. They are here right now in this room. Peter exclaimed at a volume suitable enough for a stadium audience. Peter surveyed the room, locking eyes with each of the known suspects. For the better part of the past hour, Peter had been putting together the clues of the night's festivities, and especially how they led to the death of Sheila Brewster. Sheila lay dead in the upstairs bedroom, strangled from behind by a rope or fabric of some type. And Peter found her shortly after the entirety of their weekend's guests had erupted in a blowout argument. As the storm raged outside of their remote country home, Peter Brewster, Sheila's husband and a self-appointed detective of the evening, took it upon himself to solve the crime before the phones came back on, since their cells could not catch a signal and they could not contact the authorities. With years of Raymond Chandler novels under his belt, Peter felt more than equipped to assess the crime scene and break down the suspects. It was elementary, after all. They had collectively gathered for a weekend off the grid, supposedly a few days of drinking and shenanigans amongst friends, only to quickly find themselves immersed in a cat-and-mouse game of murder. After less than an hour of careful contemplation, Peter felt assured that he knew exactly who committed this heinous crime. Peter stood in the middle of the living room, lifting his finger just as his lips began to part with the answer they were all waiting for, the guilty person's name, and then the lights went out. Pitch black, panic, screams in the dark were heard by everyone. Several sounds amidst heavy breathing preceded a thud, and then an uncomfortable silence swallowed the room. As the lights came back on, the living room floor was crimson red. As their eyes adjusted, everyone began to understand exactly what they were seeing. Peter lay on the floor, face down, his arms bent at the elbow, hands flat, a knife in his back, and obviously dead. Blood was running everywhere. Minutes ticked by as they all stared at each other, desperately attempting to fully comprehend what just happened. And like a human compass, the four suspects stood stoic in their respective directions around Peter's corpse. Sally stood north at Peter's head. She looked nervously around the room, assessing each of the remaining three parties as she tightened her scarf. Sally was a risk assessment consultant, spending most of her time evaluating auto manufacturers and their perceived risk to recall or not recall certain vehicles. She also discovered, this very night, that Sheila had been having a torrid affair with her husband Michael for the past 6 months. After their subsequent near brawl, Sally wanted to leave immediately, but the storm put an unfortunate damper on that possibility. Michael stood east at Peter's right elbow. Michael seemed to be suffering from shock as he blankly stared at Peter's body and emitted no indication of life other than oddly tucking in his shirt. Michael was a stage actor, renowned for his ability to inhabit any character, and his love of the arts coupled with his penchant for asphyxiation while lovemaking is what led to his connection with Sheila. He thought Sheila would run away with him once they were exposed, as his love for her was strong, but he was a fool. Sheila had no intention of leaving Peter, and she planted her flag earlier that very night, almost spitting in Michael's face with her assertions that she was not going anywhere. All those words meant nothing. She never loved him, and he finally knew. The secret was out, his wife threatened divorce, and both his mistress and her husband were now dead. It was only in this very moment that Michael seemed to finally comprehend his part in the night's events. Jacob stood south at Peter's feet. Jacob calmly slipped his phone back into his pocket, straightened his tie, picked up his drink off the table, smirked, and stared at his fellow suspect with amusement. Jacob had been wildly successful as a tech inventor, only to recently learn that his partner, Peter, had been embezzling from their company for years. Not only that, once Jacob asked about the discrepancies, Peter even slightly threatened to blackmail Jacob over what they referred to as the Guatemala incident. Jacob had only come with on this getaway to finally confront Peter, and now he just stood strong and smug in the knowledge that while he threatened to take everything away from Jacob, Peter had finally received his justice. Jacob softly hummed an upbeat tune under his breath as he finished his whiskey with a smile. Mallory stood west at Peter's arm. Mallory was a bit of a mousy woman, very quiet in tone and shy in social gatherings. She meekly toyed with the belt of her dress as her eyes darted from person to person. Long an assistant to Peter, Mallory had grown to love and care for her boss in a profoundly unprofessional way, though he never reciprocated. Mallory was the one who discovered the affair between Michael and Sheila and relayed that to Peter in the first place. What she left out, however, were the multitude of hours she spent surveilling Sheila, hunting for anything that could sever Sheila's relationship with Peter and bring Mallory closer to the man she loved. Unfortunately, Sheila figured out Mallory's intent, and when the blowout began earlier in the evening between the two couples, Sheila ensured Mallory's humiliation by exposing her obsession in front of everyone. When Peter followed that up with rejection, he still loved Sheila after all. Mallory knew her plan had fallen apart. The four remaining players looked at each other closely, each assessing the other, each pondering the events of the evening. Sally, Michael, Jacob, and Mallory all remained steady at their locations, eerily quiet. One of these four was a murderer, a serial killer even, at this point, and it was possible they were not quite done. Not yet. Suddenly, the lights went out. And this time, no screams were heard at all.
I got so many notes here that I look like Charlie from Sunny in Philadelphia.
Like, how you go left, right? Whoa, conspiracy.
Yeah. I got the yarn. You know, if I had a little tack board, I'd be tearing this place apart.
I appreciate that. I want to say before we get into the details, Christy Flores suggested writing a serial killer story, and Bradley J suggested writing a murder mystery, so I combined the two into that story.
Nice.
Ooh. Now that the story's laid out, what do you guys think the moral or theme of the story is?
Be decent, or you'll be dead.
Be good.
Or die.
Amanda?
I will say that I felt like it has something to do with betrayal, and so be careful who you cross or else you'll get a knife in your back.
And it works. No? I mean, you're both kind of right. Don't sleep with your friend's wife. It's pretty simple.
Oh, all right. Well, that's a good one. Solid.
If you insist.
She said solid. Okay, so.
Oh, boy.
Oh, this will be a hard episode to get through.
Oh, boy. All right, let's move into the questions. Do you guys enjoy a good murder mystery? Are you a fan of the genre, I guess?
Of course. Who is not a fan of this genre?
Yeah, I like being able to take the opportunity to get fooled or to figure something out in terms of the mystery. But I like the little hints and clues here and there. And a really good, well-built mystery is what makes it worth it. There are some that just don't try hard enough for something. I'm not really sure. And those ones aren't as exciting. But when you have a really good one.
It's one of the most, if not the most interactive form of movie going, because you're trying to, you want to win. You want to beat the movie. You want to know, you want to guess who the killer is for our you know, dashing lead does.
It's also one of the few opportunities that people become so engaged and enthralled with the movie that they don't touch their phones in a theater.
Well, you never should. You hear me? Even at home, don't touch your phone. Watch the movie.
Somebody, when I was watching Knives Out in the theater, brought their phone out, and it was like at the reveal of the movie, and I legitimately yelled at them to put their phone away, because you have to take it that seriously. Side note.
So the reveal was happening, they took their phone out, and in your mind that was disruptive, and you decided to raise them by being more disruptive?
I just said, put your phone away, and they put their phone away.
Did you miss the reveal?
No, I caught what happened.
Oh, oof. That's good, because that's a great movie.
It was, yeah.
Do you guys like them in story form? Did you guys ever read those like 2-minute mysteries? That's kind of what I wrote. Well, a little longer than 2 minutes, but you know, just shorter version of a mystery.
Well, even the old Arthur Conan Doyle Sherlock stories are pretty quick. You know, like 10, 15 pages each at that.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
Yeah, yeah, so I've read all of those, and I love those dearly.
The only sort of mystery that I've read has been more novelistic and more in the lines of horror. So I can't say that like a murder mystery type of story that I've read through. And I definitely didn't know that there was like 2-minute ones that you could read through, because that sounds interesting. Like a compilation of those types of stories.
Yeah, it does. And I think the short story format is woefully underrated. You know, we exist in an era where every movie gets rebooted as a multi-part television series. And, you know, every comic book has to go on 70 issues. Like, it's nice when people appreciate the short format. I don't need to play an 80-hour video game when you can tell me the story in 8.
Yeah,
is this exactly a plug for Smirk?
Well, we're listening to Smirk. We're on Smirk.
Yeah, it's an entire episode on Smirk. So, yes.
I'm plugging Smirk this whole episode, yes.
Don't even know what just happened. I love short stories, and especially short murder mysteries. To me, I enjoy a good murder mystery that can last a whole novel. I think it's a lot harder to actually flesh it out for an entire novel. So I always commend writers that can do it well. But there's usually so many things they have to drop in order to make that work. So when you get like a short story, it's always fun to read. Okay, you can bam, bam, bam. I know the characters. I know the scene. I know the scenario. Let me see if I can figure it out. It's easy to remember that stuff in short story format. It's a lot harder over 600 pages.
Yeah, and also, I think a good murder mystery kind of lives and dies by its twists, right? Mm-hmm. And the longer the book goes, the more twists you're probably going to have to squeeze in there, and pulling off one good twist is already difficult. So if you're extending that to 300, 400 pages, now you need twists and turns every couple, you know, every 50 pages or so. That's a whole lot to keep track of.
Well, and sometimes you'll get where they put too many twists and turns, or they try to drop little hints and it's too early. Like the timing of them has to be perfect, because otherwise then you're going to figure it out too early, or you're like, you get towards the conclusion and the reveal and you're like, I didn't find this out till like 8 pages ago. What the heck do you mean? So that, I feel like that's really important too.
Why do you think people love murder mysteries? Like, what is it about them in your mind? You both said that you enjoy them and you like it, but what is it about that concept that people love? If I solve the crime, then I'm kind of like the detective. You want to see if you can beat the detective? Do you like just putting the pieces together? What is it that people love about murder mysteries?
There are so many things. It stokes curiosity, which humans love quite a bit. It gives you the opportunity to feel smart because you're figuring out something before you're supposed to. And it also tickles our fascination with the macabre, you know, like death and murder and things like that are not something you can experience in your life. So you can experience through story and narrative and a kind of a safe way. You know, you can see the sick, twisted serial killer from afar. Yes. It's like a safe way to experience danger.
I mean, I don't really know what I'm supposed to add to that.
Words.
Well, he said all of these amazing points.
Oh,
thank
you so much.
He kind of nailed it all.
Well, let's dial amazing. Let's dial it down a little bit.
No, can I just get one compliment? Maybe.
Jeez.
Let him take the win, dang it.
I will add to it, we seem to love crime. like, for as much as everybody wants, it's ironic if you think about it. Everybody here and listening out there in the world, we love to feel safe, right? There's alarms. You got cameras in your house. You got cameras in your doorbell. You got cameras in the backyard. You got cameras everywhere because everybody's afraid something's going to happen to them. But the second something crime-wise happens on television or your podcast app or whatever, you jump right to it and you're like, oh, that's fascinating. You love to hear about other people getting killed for some reason. I don't know why, because we shouldn't love that as a culture. We probably shouldn't love other people dying, but we do. We are fascinated, as long as it's not us or someone we care about, we are fascinated with the concept of murder. And I find that endlessly fascinating. Like, why are we so obsessed with that concept? And figuring
out, because
it's
something that we can't fully understand. I mean, unless you are a killer or a murderer.
No, I'm definitely not. What?
No, never would.
But unless you're somebody who has that kind of mind, the fascination people become so obsessed with how could they do this? What did they do? What I think part of it is what Zach's saying, where there's the fascination with putting yourself in danger while being safe. It's kind of what people enjoy so much about roller coasters, because you're putting yourself in a very, what most people would say by normal standards, it's a somewhat unsafe situation that you're putting yourself into, at least before they put all of the safety measures into it. But you get to feel the danger, you get to feel the adrenaline. And so when you're experiencing some form of true crime, whether you're taking that in with podcasting or with a television show or a movie or a novel or any of these sorts of media variations, you're able to experience it in a way that you're not put in harm, like Zach said. But it also allows you to kind of expand yourself into the mind of somebody that you could not fully comprehend how they would be able to do this. And so it's fascinating to people, I think, because they just can't put themselves in those shoes. Or maybe they can, and they're like, how do I do this? I don't know.
And we're obsessed with thinking we can figure it out more than the police can.
Competition. It's a huge competition piece.
I don't even mean fiction. I just mean, like, there's so many people that get obsessed with true crime podcasts, especially when, and Dateline and all that stuff, when there's a mystery that goes unsolved, people get obsessed with it. And it's, you know, especially now that we have an online forum where people can watch something or read something or hear something and then jump on the internet and get together. And they're constantly trying to figure out who the actual criminal is. And they think they know, and they start pointing fingers left and right when they don't really know. I mean, we're fascinated with thinking we can solve the crime before the police can or the author can.
I would say that's more generational, because I feel like now, or at least the point in time, because society now only feels that way because they have an endless resource, Google, Bing, Yahoo, whatever people use other than Google, to look at those details and facts. And they feel like because they've had this overconsumption of true crime, they're an expert in this, that they know better than those who have studied and done this for years upon years upon years. Whereas before, I think the fascination was for a different reason. And I think we've now developed into this. People are so isolated and stuck within themselves and in their own mind that this is an opportunity to do something without actually having to physically do anything. And they get to be a part of something that they otherwise wouldn't be able to. And they feel that they have the capacity to do this because they have an online tool that's free and can engage themselves with.
Well, I love that people have become essentially Monday morning quarterbacks of police procedure. I just, that is endlessly fascinating. They can listen to a half hour on a podcast or they watch a Dateline episode and they think they know more than the police that have investigated the crime, and they know who did it.
Much like everyone has already diagnosed themselves before they go to the hospital.
Yes. Just like, here's all my symptoms, WebMD. Oh my God, I can't believe it's that. This is the end.
Right.
Same thing. What about the genre annoys you as a fan? Or, I mean, you can love it and still find something annoying. Like, what about murder mysteries annoy you? Anything?
Well, I think I kind of already mentioned one of the things that can be a struggle is the timing of the reveals for different hints. If you if you try to give me this story where I feel like I'm supposed to be getting some level of information so that way I'm able to follow along and progress with the story, and you're not supposed to just give me a giant twist at the end of the story and say, ha ha, it was this person, and it's like, you never even talked about them or referenced them, and all of a sudden I'm just supposed to know about them.
I hate that. That drives me
That's absurd. I want to be able to participate in this. Like Zach said, it's a form of interaction. I want to be able to participate with you. And I want to be almost tricked, but not fully. Like, I want to know that you've thought this out well enough that if I would have paid attention and I can go back later and reread or rewatch this and find the different clues that indicate, yes, this pointed to the conclusion, I missed that, or yay, I'm glad I caught that. That's part of the excitement in murder mysteries, not necessarily true crime, but murder mysteries, and saying, hey, I was able to follow along with these pieces and that led me to the conclusion. But if you just give me at the end and you're like, ha ha, then no, I'm bored. You're not a great writer if you do that, in my opinion.
Wow. Yeah, no, I think, well, Amanda definitely addressed the biggest one, which is when the stories don't play fair, when there was no way you could have seen the reveal coming. You know, this is kind of genre adjacent, but I think of the Saw films, and I always love those movies because of the twists and the reveal. And then when you rewatch the movie, you can always see like all the clues that were laid out that you could have called that twist coming if you were just paying attention. You could have figured out that Saw 4 was taking place during the same time as Saw 3 if only you paid attention to the news broadcasts in the you know, the background or something like that. Yeah, when it doesn't play fair, that definitely annoys the absolute hell out of me. Outside of that, it can be played off well, but it is a little bit annoying when the protagonist has already figured out like who the killer is, but then like because of some kind of social etiquette, they trap themselves in the room with him anyway. If you know what I mean, like
how do you mean? Explain.
Like you say, you know, you figured out that Johnny is the killer, so you're trying to leave, but he's like, oh no, stay for a slice of pie. And you're like, oh, no, I really got to go. He's like, oh, you'll love the pie. You're like, okay, it's just a quick slice then. You know, instead of just leaving, be like, hey, you know what? My kid got hit by a car, Johnny. I got to go.
That's quite a pull.
It's not really something I thought about until I saw the girl with the dragon tattoo, actually, because they address that directly in the movie. Because Michael Blomkvist goes in the house of the killer. And like in the middle of the conversation, he's like, I could tell you already know, like, I'm the killer. But isn't it fascinating that because of polite niceties and social structure, you still came into my house anyway when I invited you, even though you knew I was going to kill you.
Mm. That's true.
Yeah.
Because you know what I'd do? Run and scream. I would like wave my, I would flail. My hands would flail. And I'd be like, him, him. I don't care if I'm in the woods. I don't care.
especially like, you know, back to Johnny, like he killed the guy with a candlestick or something. Like you could get away from Johnny. It's okay. Take your chances. Scream down the neighborhood. Someone is going to find you before he hits you with a candlestick again.
Exactly. And dial your phone. Call somebody. Like, I'm going to the house where the killer's going to be. Call somebody. Send a text. Peace. Just so you know, I'm meeting the killer. His name is Jim.
Here are all the details. Here's his address. Here's his social security number. Right? It is Johnny. He killed Sheila. And I know Sheila deserved it, but nonetheless.
Sheila always had it coming.
Yeah, I appreciate that you use Sheila.
She's dead.
Well, Aaron, you love murder mysteries, so is there something that you don't like or get annoyed with?
It's mostly just cheap mysteries. I don't like cheap mysteries. You kind of both talk to it, but there's a lot of times, and this is why I do love Sherlock Holmes and Arthur Conan Doyle and how he wrote. He always worked backwards. So he, you know, here's a reveal and here are the clues I'm going to pepper throughout the way. And I learned that like writing this story. I've never written a murder mystery. I've written a ton of stuff before. I've never written a murder mystery. So I was very careful to make sure that that everything made sense in my story, that my reveal works. So if you go back and you listen to it, it works from the start to the end. And that's very important. A lot of writers don't do that. Sometimes they will use cheap conveniences or misdirection, a lot of red herrings, that sort of thing. And I just don't like murder mysteries told that way. I don't like a lot of just side jaunts to confuse you, to trying to make you think one thing when it was just play it fair, play it straight. You know, give me a murder mystery, set it up how you think it needs to be set up, but play fair. don't give me a bunch of clues that lead one direction just so you can ha-ha me at the very end. You know, make sure that, I mean, if it works, great. If your story works, like if you go back and listen to my story, I made sure that every one of those was a viable suspect for various reasons, but there are definite clues to who did it in every aspect of the people that were actually killed. So the clues are there, and I made sure of that. That was important to me, and it's important to me when a story or a movie or anything else tells these kinds of tales, because I want that. I want it to be fair. I want to be able to go back to it. A murder mystery doesn't work to me if only the reveal delivers. The whole movie has to work. The whole movie. And if the whole, and the whole book, the whole short story, the whole podcast, whatever it is, it all has to work. It can't just come together at the very end. It has to have a rewatchability, reread kind of factor where, or you can ponder it in your mind. You go back and you're thinking about it going, oh, that was, what a great, that was there. And I just didn't pay attention to it. You know, like Zach was talking about, where you would go back and watch Saw movies and you'd see all the clues peppered. You wish you would have paid attention to it the first time because you were just trying to enjoy it instead of really paying attention. It's a thinking person's genre, or it should be. And there's a lot of authors that get it wrong. A lot of authors and screenwriters and whatnot nail it. And those people that nail it really speak to me, like in my heart.
Good old heart. Like Clue, the movie Clue.
Exactly. Like the movie Clue. Which there is a reference here for Clue, which you'll find out about soon. Do you guys usually guess the who in a whodunit, or are you always fooled? Or, you know, because not everybody can pay attention to that stuff.
Oh, man, like 50-50 maybe. I don't want to give myself too much credit. I'll tell you, I always think I have it.
Till the very end? That.
Yes. There are times when I do and times when I don't. And there are times when I do where I'm disappointed that it was too obvious. And there are times when I do when I feel like, ooh, yes, called it. You know, like I had never read Orient Express or whatever, but I called the twist on that one. I felt pretty proud of myself.
You called that twist?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, because that's a bonkers twist that is really hard to make sense in my head still. And I read the book and saw the movies.
Yeah. When they actually showed how it happened, it made less sense to me. So for what that's worth.
No, that's fair. Because I'm telling you, I read the book. I didn't buy it then. I saw the original movie, didn't buy it then. Saw this movie, still didn't buy it. Still enjoy all of them. Like, it's still a great story, but it's not, like, that's the one thing. Is like, once you get to the reveal, it's like, I gotta swallow a lot of disbelief to make this work in my head.
Yeah, that was a funny case, because I feel like the reveal made the story almost worse.
Kinda, in a way.
Which is unusual. Can't wait for the sequel, though.
Oh, man, it's still a fun movie. Amanda, what about you? Do you usually guess the who and the whodunit?
It depends. Sometimes I like to just watch the movie and not fully invest. Like, if it's a movie, I like to just sit and enjoy it and have it play along without thinking too much about it. I do have the ability to just kind of turn that off where I'm not hyper-focused on paying attention to the details, and I'll just let the experience happen. There's times where I do pay attention, and like Zach said, I get it. Or there's times where I'm watching it and I don't get it. So it's not, I don't have like a streak or a record or anything for one way or the other. But I guess it depends on how competitive my nature is at that moment. Movies, I would say that I'm more drawn to not overanalyze it and just let the experience happen without trying to beat it. But at the same time, it's hard then if you only plan on seeing it one time to then critique it and analyze it for what it's worth. So
I could see that. I think I'm about 70-30. I probably overanalyze. I wish I could watch movies and read things like you do, man. Legitimately, it's something that it's kind of a problem at this point where I watch something. If I know it's a mystery of any sort, I pay too much attention to every detail. And it's kind of, it can take away your enjoyment to some degree, especially if it's poorly written. Cause then when you get to the end, you're like, no, that doesn't make any sense because this happened and that happened. That's not right. That's not how it should have worked. And it can ruin some things.
See, if you had my ability to kind of flip that switch off, but you retained your memory, you would be, and not my memory, you'd be able to experience the movie as it is and then reflect on it with using your memory and say, ah, here are the clues, or here are the things that they missed, or yada, yada, yada. To me, sometimes if I don't pay enough attention, my memory doesn't grant me enough. It's not flexible enough for me to just kind of rewatch the movie back in my head and say, I saw this and I saw that and I saw this. I have to point it out to myself while I'm watching it if it's something that I want to retain later, which is weird. I don't know if it's because I consume too much media and my brain's like, just stop. We're mixing channels here. <Yeah. laughs> or what it is. But I think that would be your preferred method.
I can't make it stop. So what do you think? Was my story truth or fiction?
I mean, hopefully it's fiction.
Yeah, someone tells me it's fiction since you told us you made it up.
Yeah.
Well, I could have stolen
give that reveal.
I could have stole the idea from like a true crime podcast or something. You never know.
Yeah, a little bit of triction.
No, it's fiction. 100%. I made it all up. Thank God.
It's true. All of it.
It's Aaron's life. Yeah. He was the murderer.
Good.
I solved the murder.
Sheely had it coming.
She did.
I ain't saying I agree with it, but I understand. So are we supposed to guess who the killer is here?
Not yet. First, you got to ask me what the title of my story is.
What's the title of your story, Aaron?
Two corpses. Everything's fine.
Perfect. Yeah.
That's funny.
There's your clue reference right there. Boom.
That's the name of the next Rian Johnson film.
It's the name of the next Aaron Peterson film.
There you go. Maybe I'll finally finish one. No, I'll tell you who did it here in a minute. But as our show goes, we will occasionally pick listener stories to read and discuss on Smirk. If you'd like the chance to have yours read, email to mystory@smirkpodcast.com. And if you like Smirk, please share this episode on your social media outlets. You can also join our Facebook group. We're on Twitter @SmirkPodcast. Be sure to use the show's hashtag Smirk and rate us in your podcast app of choice. That would be greatly appreciated. So.
Am I allowed? Do I get to guess?
No, hang on.
Yeah, I want to guess too.
Do you guys think you know who killed Peter and Sheila?
Yes.
Okay. Amanda didn't even answer. She's like, I don't know if I got it.
No, I said I wanted to guess because I do have a theory.
Okay. Who wants to go first? I'll tell you after you both answer.
Who wants to go first, Amanda?
Well, I have this theory that there was two separate killers.
Okay, I agree.
Okay, I just want to point out, if you get it wrong, you have to nail it exactly, otherwise it's wrong.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. That's fair. So, and the first part is the only one that I feel really confident on. So I do feel that there's two killers. I feel like Michael killed Sheila.
When they were banging.
Well, and he said that she was strangled from behind and that Michael was a fan of asphyxiation.
Right, yeah, so he was hitting her from behind.
And strangling her, that would have been cutting off the oxygen.
Yeah, of course. We've all been there.
Did you have a different theory so far, Zach, since you said you believe in two killers?
No, so far we're...
Okay, so we're one-on-one.
So far
we're
simpatico.
And then for Peter, this was the tougher part for me. But I went with Jacob.
Okay. Kentucky partner.
Yeah.
Because he was so happy.
He looked at his phone. He was being blackmailed and he seemed kind of, unless it was just irrelevant. But it did seem like there was maybe a spark of, like there was an impulsiveness to this because it wasn't the original murder. It felt like it was an opportunity. And who would have had that much impulsive nature? It might not have been him. So...
See, I think it was Mallory. She was fiddling with her belt because that's where she had yanked the knife out of.
Mm.
I didn't even catch that. The belt thing. I must have missed that part of the story.
I took copious notes.
yeah.
Part of me wants to say Jacob's the one who cut the lights for Mallory because he's a techie. And maybe that's why he was smirking.
I like that.
But then that really only leaves Sally as the innocent party.
She didn't get any revenge. What a shame.
Yeah.
She got to let everyone else act out the revenge and she gets to live her life with Michael's life insurance policy.
Peter's, right?
No, Michael's. Yeah. Michael's Sally's, okay. Right?
Yeah, no.
Aaron?
I don't know. Anyway, I think Mallory did the killing.
It's Sally, Michael, Jacob, Mallory are the people alive.
Right.
Well, he was talking about who was married to Sally, and it was Sally and Michael were married, right?
Michael and Sally, Sheila and Peter, correct.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So tell us the reveal of the killer now that you have Zach and I's theories.
So you both say two killers, and who were your two, Amanda?
Mine were for Sheila, and Zach and I both have this. We both feel that Michael killed Sheila. Okay. And then I had Jacob for killing Peter, and Zach had Mallory killing Peter, but Jacob doing an assist by cutting out the lights.
I said maybe. I don't know. Does that count? I mean,
are you committing to that? I'm going to commit to it because of the smirk.
So basically all three people. It's like three out of four are involved in your scenario.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. You guys want the reveal, the entire reveal?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, in regards to both of your theories, the answer is no, no. There was only one killer.
Darn it.
Bullshit.
One killer. Do you want to hear the entirety of his reveal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jacob did it.
Ah.
He straightened his tie. Remember? He straightened his tie, and Sheila was murdered with a rope or fabric.
He knew
Michael was a fan of asphyxiation from the fight that they had, so he decided he was going to frame him in his murder of her. He murdered her because once he arrived and the blowout happened, he knew there would be other, more likely suspects to cast doubt on himself. And he wanted to take everything away from Peter like he threatened to do to him. Once Peter knew it was him, Jacob knew he had to kill Peter as well. Remember, he was standing south of Peter, at his feet, and Peter was lying face down, hands flat, with a knife in his back, as if he were stabbed in the back and fell directly forward onto the floor. As a tech innovator, he set up this... Zach, you got this right. As a tech innovator, he set up a Bluetooth connection through his phone to the circuit breaker so that he could flip the lights to seize the opportunity to kill Peter. And when the lights came back on, he slipped the phone into his pocket.
That's good.
Job well done, Jacob.
Well, or Aaron for writing it.
No, just Jacob.
Jacob's the man.
Yeah, he's taking a life of its own.
And I'll leave it up to you guys if he got away with it.
Hell yeah, he did.
Because that was my favorite part. It was like when the lights go back out and you don't hear anything. It's like, that's up to everybody that's listening. You can decide where it goes from there. Maybe he gets away with it.
Yeah, he gets away clean. I like his escape.
Because he put in enough
work. Serving justice is what he did.
Oh, that was fun. That was fun.
Agreed.
I might try murder mystery again sometime, or another kind of mystery, maybe. I don't know. I like that. That's hard to write, though.
You pulled it off. You know, you fooled us.
Whew. And I promise, if you go back and listen, it all works.
I believe it.
Because I reread that thing like 18 times.
See, my strangle note was strangled from behind, not strangled from behind with fabric. I should ruin.
Yeah, mine was strangled from behind as well.
Darn it. I was too caught up in the kinkiness.
I know, me too. You can't see it. I tried to show it to you, but I did have the same weird note.
That's good that you guys hang on certain creepy things. All right. That's going to do it for Smirk. And as you write your own life story, always remember to tell it with a smirk. Like Jacob did after he killed those people.
Yeah, I definitely caught that.
Yeah, that one was a little obvious. I did like the elementary comment that you put in there, because that's a Sherlock-y.
Yeah. Elementary, that's exactly why I was there. And I also put smirk in there. I thought that was the dead giveaway. I even put the word in there with the guy and said, here's your ultimate smirk clue, the word smirk.
I just thought it was an Easter egg, okay?
Yeah, I thought it was just a shameless plug.
It is. Yeah. It's both.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But mainly, the important thing is that Sheila's dead.
Good.
Finally?
Doesn't she die in most stories? Yeah.
Yeah, she just keeps getting revived. I don't know who's doing it.
So dark witches.
I feel like I've got an issue with Sheila at some point in my life that I'm not aware of. I just got a psychological thing.
I'm very intrigued. Hopefully we can explore that in a later episode of Smirk.
Me too.